Ramsey Lewis and his trio with Wade in the Water. That was a big hit, a very big hit. It still is, from 1966. It was the title track of the album that he put out that year. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. For those just tuning in, getting to know the program, we set aside Friday for folks to express themselves about whatever it is they deem important, and they get to take the program wherever they want it to go. And to it's a free form forum. Say that fast 10 times. See what happens. Well, in any event, it is a way of making people comfortable with the idea of occupying intellectual space, publicly occupying intellectual space, expressing your points of view. But please make sure you do have a point of view. I don't want you rambling all over the place, and in the end, you have nothing to say. Please do have a point of view and be prepared to defend it. Call in at 888-874-4888 and let's hear what you have to say. Please be concise, because I like the idea of getting as many people on as possible. So don't take it that, you know, your opinion should last a good 25 minutes. You'll be depriving others of the opportunity to speak. 888-874-4888. You are dictating where the program goes today by virtue of selecting the topics you want to talk about. And we should listen, and we should be clear as you speak about what your topic is. All right. Okay, we have spoken. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, fantastic Eutrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. Fantastic and wonderful. That's a good combination.
Yeah. Well, I have some great news that was reported on the January 6th business section of the New York Times. And the headline was, NAACP tells local chapters, don't let energy industry manipulate you. It turns out that the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is working to stop both the state and local branches from accepting money and lobbying on behalf of the fossil fuel-powered utilities. And most Americans know the NAACP as a civil rights organization that has fought for equal access to public facilities, fairness in housing, and equality in education. Unfortunately, many of its chapters have advanced the interests of the coal, oil, methane, and nuclear companies, as well as utilities that are big donors to their programs. From 2013 to 2017, 10 of the country's largest fossil fuel-powered utilities gave around $1 billion in donations and contributions to groups representing minority communities to help promote the utility's interests in front of government regulators. For example, in 2014, the top officials of the NAACP's Florida division threw their organization's weight behind an effort to stop the spread of solar panels on residential rooftops, as well as cut energy efficiency standards at the behest of the fossil fuel industry. And in January 2018, the NAACP's top executives in California signed a letter opposing the government's program to encourage the use of renewable energy. Often this advocacy has come at the expense of underprivileged Americans of African descent who are more likely to have polluting power plants in their neighborhoods. But thankfully, in April of 2019, the NAACP's national office published a report titled The Top 10 Manipulation Tactics of Fossil Fuel Industries, and Derek Johnson, the NAACP's president, said that they have established a new department and dedicated 11 full-time members and 3 consultants to help stop the local chapters fight for policies that reduce pollution and promote renewable energy and improve public health. And I want to thank Derek Johnson and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and their more than important effort to combat the ravages of climate destabilization due to our dangerous and unnecessary burning and use of fossil fuels. And I say it's time to get star powered. Let's get solar. And I just want to thank you, Eutrice, for letting me say that.
Thank you, Harvey, for your contribution. That was very helpful to know and very encouraging, as a matter of fact. So thanks so much for your report.
My pleasure.
888-874-4888 is a number to call. We had quite a week this week, and it seems like it's really not over yet. All the confusion and quarreling and fighting, certainly not over yet. How did you react to the news this week? What do you find significant in terms of developments that we've been following and talking about? Were you able to identify, in terms of the topics that we could and should be talking about this week, what was basically what was unfolding this week? And what did it mean to you? How did you find the week unfolding? The president, is he kind of, how should I say it? Has he rebounded? Is he rebounding? When it looked so dark, it looked as if he had suffered some near lethal blows. But then, you know, at the end of the week, here we are, and there's Trump, and he's acting as if nothing really happened. Now, whether you like Trump or not, you have to take note of how he has completely redefined politics. Completely. And the Democrats look like a sorry lot, although they had quite a few tactical advantages. And I don't know what became of them. I see that they're attempting to hold on to their original plans, but it doesn't seem to be working. And you wonder, Where are the people in all of this, caught between these two polar opposites? Where are we? Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and to all in the PR family.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Good afternoon to
you're
you.
Welcome. Well, one of the things you've been stressing throughout the entire week is what are people going to do individually? And for me, I know that I'm definitely going to get more connected into things locally. I really want to find out others who are in my community here in Brooklyn that are like mine on a small level, just to have, just small sort of not even meetings, but just gatherings of even a coffee shop, just to discuss things. I think that's where it begins, at the grassroots. And at this point, and one of your themes also is about having clarity. And I think for myself, I know I have and have, always since listening to you, have learned to develop a skill of really having clarity. And in this case, with the person occupying the White House, I think most should have crystal clarity. You've stressed from the beginning about the unsuitability of Mr. Trump, and he's demonstrated that repeatedly, and it seems to get even worse. And so, in terms of my own action, it's just about meeting with people of like mind, and I envision a type of situation that we saw in Tehran, in Washington, on the Mall. You know, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take just a flash mob of millions and hundreds of thousands of citizens who want to defend democracy and promote peace and security to just descend on the nation's capital and at Congress, and especially at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and really make our views known and really bring out some action that will compel this person to leave or to be forced out, as well as his supporters, who, especially in the Senate.
So what brought you to the realization that this is something you have to do?
Certainly the murder, I don't want to call it assassination, it's an absolute murder illegally of the general, and which was unwarranted, and it just showed that the intensity of the lawlessness that this administration, specifically this president, has, and the people who are behind him that will not stand up to him and say this is absolute insanity. We were on the brink of something major and still are. This crisis is not over. And we cannot lie that just because things are quiet now, that it is over. I mean, at any moment, because of Trump's erratic nature, he could start something again regarding this situation. He's looking continue with this, punishing Iran unwarranted. That's kind of was the tipping point, even though I'd had several before, but certainly that put it over to the red line on the extreme level.
Do you feel good about it?
Yes, I feel good in that now when you come to a point of having a real point of clarity about a situation, and after you've backslid and tried to give all kinds of exceptions and have been lied to repeatedly, there's no alternative but to be able to have that, to come to that point where you realize that nothing is going to change unless we change and take concrete action to bring that change about. There is not going to be a change in Donald Trump. There's not going to be a change in especially Mitch McConnell and others in the Senate who just line up behind him. And so what do we what's left to do, you know, but to really come to a point where we must confront this situation in a peaceful way. And we saw in Tehran how people can gather peacefully. They weren't armed. They could have stormed the embassy, in Baghdad and other places, but they didn't. But there can be peaceful protests that show the will of the people to bring about change.
I think it's an excellent idea, and I congratulate you for becoming animated about it instead of just thinking about it.
Thank you.
You're going into action, and we have to support you and others who are going to do this kind of work. It is necessary work. Although,
yes, it is.
You know, we are inclined to wait for the call. But instead, you're saying, I can do this. This is something I must do. And you're clear about it. And you're putting your effort behind the intention of causing change, beneficial change. So congratulations. Yeah. And I
Thank
wish you. Everything good. Please do call back and let us know how things are going.
I will, I promise. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Great. Willie from Bye. Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Are you, Therese? And the
Hello.
Good afternoon. And the PRN family, my beloved sister. How are we? I hope
we are
fine.
We are all in the same boat. We're taking it one day at a time and trying to see if we could come out on the other end alive and still thinking.
Very well. Well, when we talk about supreme, in my judgment, you are the supreme broadcaster.
Oh.
This is why we're in this, in your classroom. But I do have a problem with it. Your students are very unruly. No, listen. Your students are very, very unruly and disruptive because they interrupt the professor when the professor is speaking. I'm sitting here to learn. So what good students should do is listen rather than respond. Just listen.
Well, I think they're doing just fine. I think they're doing quite well. I think we all are doing the best we can. If every now and then you have a hiccup, but it's just that, just a hiccup.
If a good student would just listen and take notes and go home and do their homework, which is go to the archive and listen again. Because the things you're teaching us, most of the time, not all the time, I'm speaking with you, but I was still, you know, whatever it is. But anyway, I got a question for you.
You just easily shift gears. Okay. I'm with you.
Now, I find it such a valuable, you find you so valuable that we could pick up our phones and whatever we wanted to know, we just call and ask you. You know it. Now, listen, if you put up four poles around at the four corners of the United States, put a roof on top of it, and put some walls around it, what kind of building would you have?
I have no idea.
Wow, surprise. It's very simple, you choose.
You have one big circus tent.
No. You'd have the largest psychiatric ward in the world. No, I'm very, very serious. Let me prove my point. Now,
okay.
Listen, I have to correct you on using the term president. No, that's incorrect. It's the so-called president. Okay. Now, you know, the reason why I say this is we know, because you did many programs on this, and we know from day one, and yet we elect a madman. We have to call it what it is. There's nothing wrong with being mad. It's not a crime. It's an illness. We have these people all over the world, and we live with them, and we mentor and care for them. But we are looking to him for leadership. That's insanity.
So, well, you know, that's what we have. And people very seldom raise the question in public. What does it say about a nation fully suspecting that the so-called leader is very unstable, but still looks to the so-called leader for direction?
That's
a very important question.
I wouldn't say unstable, Beatrice. He is a mad man, period. There's nothing wrong with being mad. It's a sickness. It's not a crime. It's nothing. Demeaning. It's just a sickness. But what frightens me is we elect him, and then we turn around and look to him for sane leadership. Now, what is that saying?
Well, here's the thing. People get a certain amount. They're to be granted a certain amount of elastic. But at some point, you have to tighten the elastic because the president is showing
so-called
and
president.
Acting out, in a way that absolutely should disturb everybody. And yet we did not see the kind of intervention taken. It was allowed. It still is allowed. He's still there. He still heads the country. He still is the holder of the highest title in the nation. He still is making, him and his administration, they're still making crazy laws and policies. And we seem not to be able to, for the sake of the country as a whole, and for the sake of much of the world, to intervene and get this matter addressed. Do we allow the president, knowing what we know, having confirmed what we suspect, continuing in the role of one of the more important leaders of the world, and continuing with policies that are highly objectionable, and he and his administration continue to take us down a really nasty road. We don't seem to be addressing that. We certainly haven't in the last 3 years. And he's about to begin his next 4 years. So I agree with you that we have to ask questions about ourselves. We should have had this resolved by now.
Exactly. If we were in our right mind. Mad cow disease, I think, with the exception of the PRN listener, and even WBI, even though WBI has been compromised, everybody else has that mad cow disease. And what I'd like to say is we are pointing at your so-called president, but it's not him. Remember, he's just working for... he's just a worker, just like everybody else, and your Congress. They're just workers. Someone tells them what to do. It's very simple. That's nothing to do with those people. They're just window dressing to make us think that we have democracy. That's absurd.
Well, it's not absurd because it has been effective. And it has been in play uninterrupted for the past 3 years as official policy. So there's something wrong with us.
Absolutely.
Worry less about what's wrong with him. And we had a really heartwarming call today from Bill from Brooklyn, who's decided that I have to do something about it. I can't sit and be a passive observer anymore.
Right.
There's something fundamentally wrong here. We can't wait for anyone to fix it. We have to be the fixers ourselves. Thanks, Willie, for calling in. Thank you.
Eugene?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. I disagree again, Professor, respectfully. Listen. The moment we had PRN, we shouldn't have this problem today, because we are blessed with a station that we receive the truth. The greatest gift anyone could give you is respect and truth. And that's what we've been getting from PRN. So there's no excuse for the majority, not all people, the majority not to know about PRN. So by us now saying we have to do something, I don't buy that, because we should have been doing something.
Yeah, but it is what it is. We cannot, in any struggle, in any situation where you are up against massive resistance, you just have to be persistent and work at it to get to where you think you could call it a victory, even if it's small one, even if it's a small one. You work as hard as you can,
but we have to,
as smart as you can.
I'm not saying it's a big work that we have to do. It's very small, because the only thing that we should have been and have to do is to let other people know where to they could get the information, because a lot of people don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's the greatest gift you could give somebody, is information, because what you don't know can kill you. And we're blessed to have a station, and you, Gary, and just about everybody else within that station. And we did not share it like we're supposed to. Because if we had done that, we wouldn't have Trump in the first place.
Well, I don't know. We could say that. Because you can't tell how human beings think and react and what they do about anything. What we can hope for is exactly what you say. Pass the word that this is a place that, at least I'm drawing on you as an example, you have found it to be very useful, because it provides information that broadens the mind and hopefully informs both your thinking and your actions. So we could use that kind of help. You could use that kind of help all day, every day. And I also encourage people to contribute, because it does.
Exactly.
It costs some money to keep going. So thanks, Willie, for your call today. Very instructive. And I'm glad that you raised those points. Judy from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, Judy. Okay. Is Judy there or what?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Good. Good afternoon, Utrice, and
good
also
afternoon.
To the rest of the PRN group.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I just wanted to make a comment, but before that, I wanted to sort of just speak on what I believe the name is Woody. Forgive me if it's not his name, but just the previous caller.
Willie.
It's amazing. I'm sorry, what's his name?
Willie. W-I-L-L-Y.
Okay. Oh, Willie. All right. Thanks. Thanks very much for that. People sometimes are not willing to embrace the truth as much as you may want to spoon feed them truth. It's unfortunate that some people just don't want to abide in that truth for whatever reason. Some people may be non-confrontational, and truth will always be confrontational, so they would prefer to just not know, to just not respond. So I don't think it's so much that we're not sharing sources of truth with people. I think there's a good number of people that don't want to hear that truth. And so I just wanted to put that out there. But what I wanted to comment on is, when I look at the news in the last couple of days and weeks, what is telling to me, also in regards to the truth that people are willing to, you know, accept and to hear, when I look at the people who are still surrounding this individual, who are still backing this individual, who are willing to wait on lines for hours just to go and hear him speak at a rally, that to me is quite telling. So it's not just the person who's speaking, but I think we need to be concerned beyond that, because, you know, you have to laugh at a clown for him to continue buffoonery. If you stop laughing, maybe he'll do some self-reflect and say, wait, I guess I'm not that funny. But when you still have people sitting and listening to him, and for him to recently say, I don't have to call anyone in Congress to make that decision, I can make it on my own. And he made, you know, such a joke about you know, a member of Congress calling him a pencil neck, and I don't have to. I don't have time to wait for him. I have the opportunity, and so I'm big man on campus. I will take that opportunity. So for the people who are sitting there, you know, and it's like, that has to be beyond all of the million things he's already done. That in itself, you have to stop and say, if you're a thinker, you got to say, wait a minute, what is going on here? But they just laugh it up. They suck it up. And that to me is like, whoa, what is going on? Like, you don't realize what he's saying beyond all the other crazy. Do you hear what he keeps saying over and over? But I don't think they get it. I don't think they see it. I don't think they actually hear what he's saying. It's almost like they're blinded by his light. That's my comment. That's all I wanted to share.
Well, thank you. The thing is, I hear the frustration in your voice, and I wonder whether you have come to terms with the idea that this is what reality looks like. We could have the highest hopes, but look what we have to work with. That's the reality. And our reality is constructed around things we are not normally considering as part of our daily lives. We just don't see it that way. We think our reality should be something else. But no, this is it. This is it. This is the President of the United States. He has power. He understands it, and he knows how to use it and abuse it for his own profit and gain. But the thing is, we have this every day. We've personalized it and given Trump all the power over this way of operating. But this is what we have encountered in life every single day in one form or another. And now we say, oh, why is he doing these things? We shouldn't put up with this, but you put up with it every day. You recognize it every day. You're insulted every day. You're exploited every day. He is just a concentration of the dislocation, the social dislocation that we have adjusted to so well every day. So we also have to ask a question of ourselves. How come we put up with this every day? How come we suddenly recognize it because it's Trump? We tolerate disrespect at work. We tolerate crazy policies in the communities that we live. We tolerate abuse every day. So what makes this different? Have you thought of that?
I have. Okay. I guess maybe, you know, maybe it's the way that it was packaged. You know, it sort of was not blatant, the disregard, even though it was there, you know, but it's like a shovel full every day now. And sometimes it's a little, you know, it's too much to bear. And you're right. It's been there. It's not, you know, just coming into existence. It has been there, but at least we had some semblance of order, some semblance of sense. And, you know, now that I think about it, maybe it's best that it's brought to the fore so that we can actually, you know, deal with the wound and actually see what we can do to fix it. If not in anything else, like in society, but at least within ourselves. Now we know.
My point is, this is our society. He has crystallized it, and he has provoked us into looking at it. He's in your face with it. You can't escape it. We had managed in years past to, you know, block it out of our memory of our existence. It's in your face. And it's not different. It is exactly the same formulation. But people are very, very unwilling to really stare it down, look it in the eyes and ask, not what's wrong with him, but what's wrong with me that I'm putting up with this? That is what is happening. We are very angry with Trump, and he enjoys it. This is part of what motivates him. This is his adrenaline. He has managed to irritate the heck out of most all Americans. But what really is his reward, his psychological reward, is we're not doing anything about it. As if to say, we can't do anything about it, which is why he becomes more and more atrocious by the day, more daring, more obnoxious. He is operating on the truth that we will not concede, and that is, we cannot, at least that's a perception, we cannot do anything about him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the guts to face him down. We don't have the guts to put him out of office. We don't have the guts to confront him and his entire administration. And he has proven himself correct so far. There's been no organized resistance to Donald Trump. And we are proving to ourselves every day when we shut down, when we avoid, when we decide that, you know, this is too big a deal for us to take on, we give him permission to do exactly what he's doing. That's the question. What is it that prevents us from honoring our own dignity?
You know, if I can, I don't know if it would be saying playing devil's advocate, but you said it recently. You said we've given the people who hold office the job to create or to continue this democracy. It's something that we've kind of removed ourselves from. There are officials, we vote them in, and they do what they're supposed to do to make this thing called democracy a reality. So I think that's part of it. You know, so I guess it's like a whole rethinking and understanding that it's not them who are in Congress or the senators, because quite frankly, I don't know if they really, well, I don't know, I don't want to go, you know, too far, you know, in front of myself, but if they honestly, I think, wanted to remove him by now, I think he would be removed. I don't think that it's really something that they're actually pursuing. Of course, I could be wrong, but that's just my point of view. I don't think it's something.
I just said the same thing. We have given permission by abrogating our duty to ourselves and our interests. I mean, just think about it. Let's remove all of the emotion, as we call it. Let's remove that. And then come to the bottom line, the nitty-gritty. What is politics for? It is about rule, power, ruling. It is about protecting what you see as your interests, and by extension, because we have to look at the unique history of the United States, it's about reclaiming racial dominance and power. It's not sentimental at all. That's what it is. We want to think we should all hold hands and walk into the sunset. No, that's not power. It's a ruthless exercise of power. And it happens in this society that that's the basis of political organization. We can't afford to get emotional about it or sentimental about it. But we are recoiling. That's my problem. Why do you recoil when you should go the other way? Advance. Advance into the territory that you've been expelled from and all of the advantages attached to that. This is the nature of our existence. We didn't make it this way. Somebody did. Groups of people did. They aligned themselves with each other to maximize their power, and this is what we have. We have a situation where a mentally unstable man, only because he's white, when you break it down, can rule this country unquestionably and can have impact globally. Mirroring the same standards, if you will, so that what obtains in the United States, you can expect somewhere else. Look at what is happening in Britain right now with Meghan Markle and her husband, Prince Harry. Do you think that race has nothing to do with this?
I thought the same thing.
That's the message. That's the global message. We are fighting a global phenomenon all the time. We forget that. So she has a child who is going to be a prince of some sort. So what does that matter? The thing is that she broke, and her husband too, they broke the cardinal rule. No matter what you do, no matter what, you cannot belong here. You just can't. And we will see to it. Here in the United States, we have the same version of the same theme. And we pretend we can't see it. Markle's fight is the same as our fight. She may be a princess. We may be commoners, as they call us. It's the same thing. There's no difference at all. None. So we have to, I think we have to return to this question and spend some time with it and come up with solutions that help us as a people. And then when I say as a people, I'm not saying only black people. I'm talking about people of conscience. People of conscience. And I thank you for raising the question. But I want to urge you to continue thinking about it. You look around and you see it's the same fight. It's the same fight. Thanks so much for calling in today, Judy. Appreciate it. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hello.
I want to say I think people need to drive it into their heads that the United States of America was not created to be a democracy, and as far as I can see, it's not a democracy today. The system we have, it's created as a slave republic, and people should not forget that. And those in power, those at the top, did not mean it to be a democracy. But what I wanted to say is this. When President Trump was elected as the chief executive of this country, what we have now is not just a president, but an emperor. It's Emperor Trump. He's going around the world bullying other nations, telling them who they can trade with, and giving orders throughout the world. This must be extremely insulting to these people in these other countries, that they have to follow orders given by the emperor. So to me, this is a very serious problem that is happening now in the world all over. You either obey what he says or you become subject to sanctions. And I'm sure he has maybe a couple dozen or more sanctions all over the world for different transactions, situations that people got themselves in by not doing what the United States wanted them to do. So this is a serious problem.
Take another look at this from a different angle. There's no way I could disagree with what you just said, because it's true. But look at how quickly he was able to get to the point where he could exercise his power as emperor. And that is because the people he is speaking to and the concept he's speaking to is galvanizing white supremacy all over the world. They're listening to that.
Absolutely.
They don't care whether people disagree or they have problems with it. They care only that finally somebody has come along after all these years and affirmed white supremacy globally. He has taken charge of the project, but he is on point no matter where he implements his policies. Why? What is behind it? And that is galvanizing white supremacy. That's the thing that we are missing. We think he's just being, deranged and obsessed with power. And he is, because that's what's necessary in order for him to do what he has to do. He has to be audacious. Adam Clayton Powell used to call it audacious power. That's what he's doing. He is implementing the science of oppression, the science of world domination. He doesn't even understand that. He's not bright enough to understand that. But those of us who are following his actions and his thinking, this is what we would likely conclude.
Yes, well, I'll add to this that the people in this country, they have been so well trained, and I emphasize that word trained, that they're going along with his behavior and his mission that is not in their interests. Their minds are clouded with the concept of white supremacy in this country. And even though those people who are supposedly benefiting from this policy, they have no idea that in the long run it does not benefit them or the people in the world. And I think that it would be a very difficult, but something we should very emphasize, that this has to change. And the people who are benefiting, the ruling class, that small fraction of 1%, are not going to give this up easily. So it's going to have to get to the point where the masses of people, the vast majority of the people, have to get to the point of rebellion. You're not going to just change this by, writing letters to your congressperson or legislative person. And people have to get that. And they have to get by the training to get them to be docile and to go along with the system as is. And that's what happens in the schools, in the media, or throughout the country, because those who rule control it, and they control the information, and they control the training of the people to get them to the point where they're submissive to the ruling class that runs the United States of America.
Amen. Thank you for your input today. Thanks for your call. E from Edgewater, you're up next.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing, best I can. But, David pretty much said what I was going to say. There's not much time anyway. But I think, we have to realize there's rich people in every country. There's rich people. And they all have one thing in common. They're rich. Rich people in the United States, rich people in Iran, rich people in Iraq. They're all the same. They're rich, and they want to stay rich. And I think what we're seeing going on in the world today is a war on poverty. There's been a war on poverty a long time, but now it's a real war on poverty. And they feel that if you can eliminate the people that are impoverished, then you can defeat poverty that way. And then you can just have a middle class and a rich class. And the middle class is great. We support the rich class. We take care of ourselves. We can afford a house, car. We go to the supermarket, load up our carts with all the junk they want us to buy. The poor people can't do that. So they got to eliminate that part of society, and then they'd have the world the way they want it so that they can make it this futuristic world going up in space, having self-driving cars and all that. That can't happen until you eliminate the poor class. And that's what we're seeing now, but we're not seeing it because we're distracted with all this other stuff going on. And we think that the Democrats and the Republicans are different. They're the same. And rich people in Iran and Iraq and the United States, they're all the same. They're all in one boat, and they're all against the people that are poor and impoverished. And I really don't know how much more I can say about it. There's not that much time.
When you say, how did you come to the conclusion they're all the same?
Rich people? Well, yeah. It's just logic. It's logic. When you have lots of money, you want to keep it, and that's your main concern, staying rich, because that's where you like to be. Some people don't have no desire to be rich, and they're glad just having enough. I don't understand why people need to have so much, and that's where there's a conflict there, because I'm just satisfied with having enough and helping other people try to do better. And the rich people, they don't really care about that. They want to have a good time, enjoy their lives of luxury and great
and hope, waste. And confident that they will never die.
Yeah, and they're almost, with the use of technology, they can almost extend their life. I mean, do you think Nancy Pelosi can
even...
Oh,
I'm sorry to say, because I'm hearing the music cues. But thank you so much, E, for calling in today. It's always an eye-opener when you offer something that sounds so, it sounds so logical, but as we know, it doesn't work that way. Thanks so much.
Thank you all.
Have a great weekend, and we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.